days to the high-tech internet, cell phone, smartphone days that we're in right now?
Well, of course, it accelerates everything, Ed. You know, when they taped my dorm phone, I had no idea, of course. The FBI taped it. This was what my coach told me 25 years later. The only time that I think I ever spoke to the person that was a gambling interest who knew my father and had placed bets for my father and supposedly was calling to congratulate me of making all tournament in the Christmas tournament that year, which was 1961-62 season, and supposedly just congratulating me on beating the leading scorer on the team and so forth. Well, at that point, they thought that somehow I was going to have an influence on a game. Now, that could have gone back to 1961 with the Georgia Tech NC State game, that somehow they picked up on me at that point, or the team at that point, and decided to check. They don't not only check me out as a guard, but any team player that was the controlling person in the game was very important back then. Today, it'd be a little harder to fix a game, I will admit, because back then we didn't have the three-point play. Back then we didn't have the shot clock. So, you know, you could slow a game down, and then you had over and under bets, scores of combined teams. They would combine the team score, and they could bet over or bet under, and a player might be able to control the game in that way. But here's the thing. Pro basketball, which you spoke about, is certainly vulnerable because, yeah, I know they make a lot of money. But let's say a college player had influenced games when he didn't have any money. And once they have their claws in you, and that's the reason they would do it, maybe, they see a great player coming up, possible great player, going to make a lot of money when he signs. So they get him compromised in college. Now, they can pull that up, high tech, any way they want, communicate with him. They need a game changed, fixed, controlled, and this is payback time. So there's a lot going here that may, may well one day surface. It hasn't as of yet, probably, but, we've seen where professionals, they can be involved. There was a referee that was involved in fixing games, and that was controlled and dealt with very quickly. But there's a lot of this possibility.
Yeah. Are you talking about the guy in 2007?
Yes.
Yeah, right, Tim Donaghy. Right.
Yes.
This is going to be my next question. Listen to what they gave this guy when he pleaded guilty. All right? They brought him up on two federal charges. All right? He did 15 months in jail. 3 years on probation, and of course, his public enemy number one, et cetera, et cetera. Did he get off easy, or does that sound about right? For fixing an NBA game, for pleading guilty to interfering with a contest in the NBA.
Yeah, I think that's huge. Should be huge, and I believe they just slapped his hands on it, and then it goes underground again. You know, the sacred cow in college or professional, especially professional basketball, is the referee. So here was a case where it surfaces, but, you wonder, would it be something that they would want to quickly diffuse? And that's maybe what happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe. Maybe exactly what happened there. They want to make it vanish as quickly as possible.
Right.
So, it's funny. I was talking to some of my buddies earlier about politics and the world, right? And we were talking about, my point was maybe the United States or the world in general, I would say maybe we're not governable. Like every once in a while, I wonder, maybe the rules are insufficient. We don't have the right laws all on the political side. So let me come over to the sports side and ask it the same way. You just underscored the importance of the referee. And this is the last big bad example that came out where it got all the way through the courts and was found out. I'm sure stuff goes on that goes uncovered. Do we have to accept, whether we like it or not, that referees, just like other humans, are going to cheat when they can, and we should be... preventing, deterring maybe is a better word, maybe you can't prevent, but we should be deterring this because we're responsible to know, obviously, it's always going to be ongoing. Whether we hear it about it or not, somebody's trying, somebody's working it. So it's the job of the sport to deter this. But you follow where I'm going with that?
Oh, exactly. In fact, that was one of the points in my book that I wanted to bring out. I was really happy to have Bobby Cremins do the foreword on the book. And I sent him a letter in 1988. That was a year after my coach sat me down and explained everything after an alumni game. And Bobby Cremins had players that were getting ready to go to the pros. He had some very good teams. And I sent him a letter similar to the one I sent Coach Hyder, trying to reiterate what I'd been told, because I was in such shock that day when I heard it. I wanted to be able to have something referenced that proved I had had the conversation. And Coach Hyder was a wonderful guy and ended up writing me a letter, nice letter back, and mentioned Bobby Dodd, who was on his deathbed at that time, that I'd sent him a letter as well, because it was him and Coach Hyder that had made this decision. And I referenced in the letter from Coach Hyder, Coach Dodd said that Frank was a scrapper, which was a blessing to me all those years later, and he still remembered I cared so much about the game. But anyway, I sent this letter similar to it to Bobby Cremins, and he read it to his players, because he was trying to give his players a heads up. He was trying to warn his players, look, your whole future is ahead of you. Don't sell it for a pot of porridge or $2,500 or $20,000, because your whole life, Bradley gets $700, Ralph Bradley, from a gambler who was implicated in some way that attached him to this scandal in 1951, and he never got away from it, never could outlive that $700 loan, of which he said in an article not long before he died that he never influenced a game for that money. That was a loan, but it was over. Once you were tagged,
over.
It was over. So you got to warn. The point I'm making is you got to pre-warn these college players, either through them reading a book like I've written, maybe no one else has written one, I don't think, to try to discuss this in the way that mine is, from seeing this thing from the point of view of a person who wasn't involved. But look, they talked about all the numbers of people in the 60-62 that were involved. In 1951, all of the numbers of people, players that were involved, but a lot of those players were players like me, who never knows to this day what really happened to their career.
Wow.
Think about it. Yeah. And it's traumatic.
I think not well understood, and I thank you for underscoring it. People need to know this. And, there's a lot of benevolent faith in the purity of sport, regardless how individuals behave. The general idea that I'm watching an actual contest here, compared to some kind of wrestling match where it's decided ahead of time who's going to win and an exhibition. This is an important point in a culture, right?
Right, in our culture now, Ed, if you think about it, back in my day, kids didn't gamble much. They were getting into it, but not like today. These 18-year-olds and younger are buying lottery tickets. They're already gambling. They're already looking for the big money. One of the things that happened at the Arizona when there was a basketball shaving scandal, it's in my book, one of the players was living in a dorm with a guy that was losing a lot of money. He wasn't a player, but he was losing a lot of money gambling, so he talks his roommate, who is a good player, into missing free throws. So, you've got gambling that now is so prevalent, and these kids coming up, they're learning how to gamble, and I think it's more of an epidemic. It's never going away, so the only way to control it is to forewarn and put people on notice And then I think, you know, you got to be ever vigilant.
That's it. I mean, that's exactly. I mean, really, that's why we enjoy having you on. This is what I think the media doesn't do well enough. There should be some constant reminder that this is always possible.
Yes.
Kind of, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, like, the hacking that they do. They hack into the Target store. They take everybody. They're trying this all the time. The only time we hear about it on the news is when they succeed and they're discovered. And that's what fixing games seems to me to be exactly like, because you're going to have a roommate today with the same relationship of those roommates decades ago.
Sure.
That's not going to change. What people are motivated by, I don't think that changes. What changes is the date and the time and the specifics that, well, they're holding an iPhone, and years ago they were standing next to a wall phone, right? That's
right.
Different.
Right.
The basic things, I don't think have changed at all.
Not at all. In fact, you know, today I think it'd be easier to influence than maybe it was even then. There's just so many ways technology's increased and people can get around. They want more money today. They see material things all around them, and they want it now. And sometimes they make bad decisions to try to make that happen.
Frank, you are a great guest. I am always, always grateful for your time, your generosity, the way you open up. But you bring something else to us that I'm grateful for. You got wisdom on a subject that right now is as dangerous as ever before, and that we extremely appreciate from you.
Well, thank you
for being on today.
Thank you.
Going to have you back. What'd you do for the summer? Did you do anything big for the summer? What'd you do?
Well, I went back to work. At my age, I decided that I'd retired three times, and I decided that I wanted to be out and about and meet people and be involved, and went back to work, and I'm having a great time. I'm studying right now at age 77, September 14th, Lord willing, and become a realtor here in the next week or two, and I'm looking forward to helping people find that house that they need.
You are going to be terrific at that. Wow. All right, you are the man in every way. We consider you a friend, an expert, a wise man, and also an exciting new career begins for our buddy. So we'll be in touch. We'll have you back on the show. We look forward to an update. How lucky are those people when they pick up the phone and call you? You are going to find them a beautiful home.
That's right.
Can't wait.
Beautiful home, a beautiful home, Ed, in a wonderful country that I am so grateful that I was born in and had the privilege to spend it in this country.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Have a great day.
Beautiful story.
Thank you.
All right, you have a good one.
You too.
All right, congratulations.
Thank you.
Frank Landry is the author of From Hero to Zero, a true story involving the price, game fixing. What do you, price fixing? Not doing price fixing. Game fixing. Yeah. College championship basketball scandal, fixing games for illegal gambling. That's what the book is about. It's a gripping story about him, the FBI, his father's bookie and friend, and the 1961 Dixie Classic scandal. Two places to get it. Very easy. Go to Amazon.com, or you can go to www.miapress.org. That's www.miapress.org. It's the Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network.